cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Hour number three of the radio program for this Monday, April 21st, 2014. This is Canada's most listened to sports talk show. It's Primetime Sports, coast to coast on the Sportsnet radio and television networks. Yours truly, Bob McCowan, along with the coach, Butch Carter. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe will join us momentarily. I don't pretend to know Masai Ujiri really well. Do you know him very well?
No, I do not.
I mean, I've talked to him on numerous occasions, obviously interviewed him here. He's sat in the studio on a couple of occasions. I mean, I almost fell off my chair when I heard what he'd said about the Brooklyn Nets. It just didn't seem in character for him. He just didn't seem to be that kind of a guy.
Well, I actually think that his background, if you look at his background, where he was raised, the stuff that he has seen in his life, that there's a lot of fight in him.
Clearly.
Right, and he let the emotions get the best of him.
It just happened, I guess, you know.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's a big deal. I think.
Oh no, neither do I.
Right. I mean,
I think it's funny as hell.
I think it's only a mistake if 8 and 9 and 10 year olds are out there, but for the rest of it, I mean, you know, it is what it is. I think. You know, it's what I've talked, you know, you've allowed me to talk about on the show is that what do you think Phil Jackson is saying in New York? What do you think Pat Riley is saying in Miami?
Yeah.
All right. What do you think Larry Bird? I mean, he's got to have that mentality to survive. All right. We just didn't expect him to express it. So, you know, it's not a big deal.
So here is the president of basketball ops and general manager of the Toronto Raptors. Here's Masai Ujiri. What the hell were you thinking?
What's going on, guys? What's going on, Bob?
How you doing, pal?
Hey, Masai.
I don't know. You know, I'm going to say it here. You know, like I really apologize to families, kids. You know, my mother raised me better. You know, like, and I also apologize to you know, to Brooklyn. For me. Whether it's the whole of Brooklyn, the Brooklyn organization, you know, like, to be honest, Bob and Butch, is that for me, that the message wasn't even about them, you know, like, it was really about being emotional about us, you know, like, and standing up for who we are. I'm really tired of, you know, like all the apologies in Canada and who we are, and it's to see the fans out there, to see. And the support, you know, like see how hard these guys play, you know, and to be honest, a great organization that, you know, like I think is first class or they really try to be. I really feel that it's time to stand up, you know, like and preach who we are, you know, like and stand up tall and be proud of who we are. We're not here to apologize anymore. Yes, players left. Yes, you know, like there hasn't been so, but it's the way forward. You know, we have to start thinking the way forward and be proud of who we are here. So for me, that was honestly the message. I want to win. We want to win here, and I think we showed good fight this year, and we want to keep growing and building. So, and it's not even just about the series. It's going forward. You know, like we complain about. So many things, you know, like, but we have so many things to be blessed, you know, like to be thankful for, and we're blessed here in Canada. So let's stand up strong and, you know, like, hey, go fight whoever we have to fight and be proud about it. You know, we're going to win some, lose some, but at the end of the day, we want to grow as a team. That was my message. And I apologize again that it didn't come off the right way, you know, to family and kids and also to Brooklyn, but it really wasn't about that.
So Lewicki's with you. What did he say afterwards?
he hasn't said, you know, like, I think they understand my passion, you know, like, they right. see it, you know, like, it's funny, I got a couple texts from Denver players, you know, like, because they remember, you know, like, they remember when I was saying the same thing about, you know, like, the Lakers or the other teams, you know, because, you know what, you're going to war against them, you're going to fight against them, you know, like, so... It's really not about them. It's trying to get your guys up and, you know, but also, you know, look at that crowd out there, you know, like, and the support, you know, like, you're trying to rally your troops and say, hey, you know, like, this is us going forward. So, there's been no, within, you know, like, yes, I used the wrong language, bad choice of language, you know, like, and I really do apologize because, my wife was the first one to. I'm so scared when my mom hears about this in Africa. She hasn't heard yet. But I talked to her yesterday, and I was thinking, okay, when is she going to say something? But nobody has said anything to her yet, so I'll wait.
Well, what she doesn't know won't hurt her.
Yeah, exactly.
So you talked about the crowd outside the building and inside the building. I didn't have the privilege of being there. I was busy on Saturday, but by all accounts, it was positively electric inside that building. Based on your experience, how would you categorize it?
Best I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah, by far. You know, like, I was in that Golden State arena playing against them with the Nuggets last year in the playoffs, and that was electrifying. This right here was, I think, same as that or more. You know, like, everybody was into it, and they supported the team outside. You know, like, I wish actually the thing I would have done was, like, sneak a door open, you know, like, over there and let all everybody from outside get in, you know, like, get into the building. But no, it was crazy, Bob. And you know, we're proud of it. I think we should be proud of this. And I think the biggest thing is sustaining and moving forward and growing, you know, like, as a team, and continue this movement that we want to have of we the North. That's who we are, and we're damn proud of it, and we're going to continue going forward.
Now, that environment, I think it takes an adjustment for the players, because they've played, you know, the 41 home games plus the exhibition games in a different environment. And I think it's a little surprise for them to come in and see all the T-shirts and everybody sitting in their seats. And it takes a little while. I think that was part of, you know, beside their lack of inexperience in playoffs, and then they're playing in an environment that is unique. It's never been seen before in this environment. You release We the North. There's just a lot of stuff going on. It's all good for the players. And I think it takes a little massaging by the players to get them used to that. And I think they'll be better in game two.
There's no doubt. I always go back to what I know. I'm sorry to make references, but you know, the Denver, we played the Lakers, and that, I remember that first half. You know, like, our first game in the Lakers. You go in, those lights are on the court. You know, like, the crowd. You know, and all that stuff. You know, like, it's just for young players, and we had young players. You know, it's I could feel that coming a little bit with our guys, you know, with Terrence and Jonas and DeMar first time, and a couple more guys, their first time seeing this. And you don't know till you go and sense it, you know, like, and get a feel for it, and you actually, like, then actually, like, have it happening right there. It takes a lot, you know. Some guys, it's going to take them 2 minutes to adjust. Some guys, it takes them one game. Some guys, it takes them a half game, as you know, Bushy. Some guys, it takes two games or something, you know. Like, when I look at some of these guys playing in the playoffs, you know, like Kevin Garnett or Paul Pierce, and their remarkable experiences, they too were in this situation at some point in their careers, you know, like, where, you know, the playoffs were tough for them, you know, and they had to adjust and they had to grow. So we're in those stages, but we're out there fighting, and I know these guys are going to come out fighting tomorrow, and they'll play and compete.
Well, I think that when I go back and look at what Vince did, he shot 30% in the first playoff series we had. And I was befuddled for three games trying to figure out how to get him a basket. And it's just the way it is. Things are different. People guard differently. And I thought that the most important thing, regardless of this series, is that your young guys would keep their value, that they wouldn't fall off the table. And I think that, you know, they are a good bunch. They've shown that. And I think they will mature. They may win, and we hope they win. But I think that they need to show, you know, a little maturity and play a little better for their own self-confidence.
No doubt. I think it's an experience, coaches. It's how we grow out of it and how, what we get out of it and how we grow from it. I mean, I think they really, Yona showed the other day that, you know, like he'll compete, you know, like he'll fight out there. I think Terrence, it was a little difficult with the foul trouble. He got a couple quick whistles. That's going to happen because of his inexperience. And then all of a sudden it takes him kind of out of the rhythm. He's not experienced enough to know how to deal with that yet, but I know he'll bounce back. And DeMar, I think it showed he struggled a little bit, but he'll adjust. He's done well in adjusting to games after now he's seen the atmosphere. And but you're absolutely right. How do we grow from the? How do we continue to grow from this and going next year with more value, more experience, and knowing how to deal with this when it comes again.
When you evaluate, not to get away too much for the game, and I want to let Butch back in here, but. When you're evaluating the season, do you have a philosophy, a mathematical formula that allows you to compare performance in playoff games versus performance over the course of the regular season?
Yes, Bob, we have all kinds of formulas. In fact, when I came out, it's Mike. Analytics guys are in the other room now. We've been meeting since 1 o'clock, and they've been driving me crazy because they're throwing out all these numbers, and we just asked the question, you know, like where were we with games we were supposed to win versus games that we didn't win, games that we played against teams that did not have their full squad. Versus games that where we did not have our full squad, and we're looking at all these numbers. It's something we've been in a meeting now for 4 hours, you know, like trying to study how we can sustain this team, how we can evaluate what kind of value our guys have and moving forward, you know, like how we can bring consistency. As you know, coach, you kind of have to be consistent a little bit. Guys familiar with the system, guys chemistry, all that stuff we study every day, like hours and hours, because we're trying to sustain here, and we're trying to build a good team. At the same time, we're trying to assess the kind of players we have, and no matter how we talk about it, guys, we're in a projection business, you know, like, and we have to figure out how to project what Terrence Ross or what Jonas or what Patterson or what these guys are going to be in the future. So
right.
That's your question. We are doing that constantly.
Well, I've got, our fans don't really understand that not only are we in the playoffs, but you have a job also. How much are you looking at? Do you have guys out scouting other pro teams? And also, you know, I know the Portsmouth Invitational was going on. You know, did you have staff down there? And how are you working through that process as the playoffs go through?
Coach, I do everything. You know, my scouting is my background is scouting. To be honest, and so. I was at the Hoop Summit. You go to all the invitationals, went to all the college tournaments, went to Europe, and was in six countries in 7 days right before the playoffs. I wasn't here when we clinched. I wasn't here when we hung the division banners. You know, like for me, it's how you want to build your team, and I just come from the background where I have to go see the players and evaluate for myself. But our staff do a great job, and they are everywhere, especially at this time of the year, trying to scout, trying to figure out. Brought them in for the playoff game so we can meet and evaluate some more among ourselves, and that's what we're doing today. All the scouts are in town to enjoy what they work for and watch the team as well as us meet during the day. So everywhere, Coach, we just try to evaluate as much as we can and see how, where we can find talent. But I do it myself, too. I don't sit here and I have to do it. I have to see it because that's my background.
So then if you went to Hoop Summit, the only player you missed was the Maker kid who's in Virginia who didn't show up, I guess.
That's yes.
Right. Right. So the last thing I have to ask for you, I think that you guys have done a really good job. I think it's been very good to watch a team that makes mid-range shots, which throughout the year, DeMar has just been outstanding at making that elbow jump shot. The staff will go ahead and make their adjustments. The team will absorb the game plan, and then they'll go at it again tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But I think for your guys in analytics, can I make a suggestion to you? Is that you should check your analytics when you play teams who have strong wing players,
mm-hmm.
athletic wing players.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where we see where the math moves a little bit for you.
Mm-hmm. And there's right? no question, Coach. I mean, like Joe Johnson and Paul Pierce is what we were talking about today. Some of the toughest wings in the NBA. You can they're big, they're strong. Paul Pierce can go between the four and the three positions, and we have to adjust. But I think Coach Casey has done a great job, and that's the coaching staff, and I think they'll continue to try to give them the information we can get. But at the end of the day, we have to do it on the court. You know, like that's the old school part, you know, and we bring all these numbers and show all the stats of where we can improve and strengths and weaknesses and places that are advantages and disadvantages, but we at the end of the day we really have to go out and play. And the coaches, I tell you what, Coach Casey has done an unbelievable job of adjusting, and hopefully we can adjust properly tomorrow.
Well, I mean, you don't have to, you know. Again, if you win tomorrow, you know, it is what it is. It's two games. You've been very good on the road. History has said that. So you know, you should be able to go there and win another game. And at least, and then, you know, bring it back the home court advantage. So, again, we wish you all the luck. And, you know, I'm glad you called in and took the time to talk to us. And we hope you'll do it again.
I appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me. And, again, I sincerely do apologize to families and kids and everybody that was out there, you know, like a wrong choice of words. And to Brooklyn, again, I emphasize, I do apologize, but I'm not apologizing for who we are, who we are, and who we need to stand up for. And we're going to be this team that's going to try and grow and some way, somehow, at some point, make some noise. That's what we strive to do. That's what we're doing in sports. Why we play sports is to be competitive. So I appreciate you guys. Thanks, Bob, and thanks, Butch, for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Masai.
Thank you.
Masai Ujiri, the general manager and president of basketball ops. All right. Enough of the apologies. Wasn't that bad.
No, it wasn't that bad. I mean, I think he needs to let it go because...
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it anyway.
Yeah, I mean...
I love that fire.
Well, the issue at the end of the day is that that's the mentality he really has to have.
Yeah.
And he's learned that he's got to pick a better place, but... And it was a pep rally.
The words were the wrong choice. The sentiment was perfectly fine.
Totally agree. I mean, he emotionally got caught up and said, hey, let me give him this one good, you know. So, you know, he had gas and he threw it on the fire.
See, I just said it.
It's not a big
I mean, I know you don't really want to say that in a group where they've got young people and stuff. And I mean, I get all that, but...
But Bob,
I think it was, you know what it was, Butch? I think it was just, I think a lot of people, myself included, just didn't expect it from him. I didn't know him well enough to know that he had that kind of fire in his belly.
Yeah, because he has a reserve perception when he's out amongst the professional people.
Yeah.
But he clearly has the ability to go in the locker room and tell a young man that we got to go out here and kick ass. And there's nothing wrong with that.
So were you a potty mouth in the room sometimes?
Never.
See, I've never heard you use a profanity.
No, that's not.
It's not you.
The reality for me is that I believe I have to get in a young player's head. All right? But as an example, and I told this story, we're playing the Milwaukee Bucks. They just named the Olympic team. Vince Carter's not on the Olympic team.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And so they go through the starting lineup, and the last guy, you know, the assistant coach, well, you know, he's giving the pitch, and then I tell who's guarding. I don't say a word. Oakley says, well, Butch, who's guarding? I said, don't worry about it. He can't even play for his own country. I think he had 38 at halftime.
Oops.
And Allen had 8 stitches. All right. And Oakley told me, walking down the tunnel at halftime, he said, I think you need to leave Vince alone. But for me, it was a matter of, I tried to put in front of them what the bare bones facts were early. All right. I'm not a pep guy, because I try to put the bare bones, like, hey, here are the 4 best guys at your spot in the East. This is what they're doing every night. And this is your reality.
Yeah, if you want to be them, this right. is what you have
this,
to get
this
to.
This is your reality. And so, you know, I'm not a foo-foo guy. I think that you have to do all the things that make them comfortable. Put the kitchen in the locker room. Make sure they have meals. You have to be first class. I learned that from Dr. Buss as a rookie. They gave me a key to the room on the road. And like, well, who's my roommate? Lakers, you don't have a roommate.
Yeah, you get your own room.
Right. He paid for it.
Yep.
Right? Because, I mean, he understood. And so you have to understand that, and you have to do it. And then you have to keep upgrading your horses. Like, I think the most important thing out of this playoff is that we do not demoralize the value of the guys on the team.
Right.
And that's what happens to teams. Teams don't play well in the playoffs, and all of a sudden, you know, that GM wants to trade the guy because we don't need that. We're not at the point where we need our value on our guys to be extremely high.
With Butch Carter, I'm Bob McCown. It's prime time, 21 minutes past the hour. From the Boston Globe, our friend Bob Ryan joins us. Hello, Mr. Ryan. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good. Thank you.
Look, let's get right at it here. Mark Emmett, president of the NCAA, moron, said, oh, I didn't say that out loud, did I? Says in an interview, if he were a college football player, he wouldn't want to get paid beyond his scholarship. How dumb is this guy?
I don't understand where he goes with that and what the rest of the statement was. Look, Mark Emmert is in a position of defending the indefensible, because the system has been allowed to evolve in many aspects, not all, but in many aspects is illogical and indefensible. But he's the guy in charge. He's the head man, the face of the National Collegiate Athletic Association. He's been in business as such since 1910, trying to codify college athletics. And people in America just have never really gotten grips with what is it that's reasonable and practical and fun and workable moral about this system that we have that no one else has. And it's crazy. It's not working right properly right now.
Mr. Ryan, Butch Carter, I think after being an athlete, playing at Indiana, having a younger brother, Chris, playing in it, and then being involved as an assistant coach in college sports, I think what we're seeing is there's clearly an acceptable change to the definition of amateur sports. And he is in the inevitable position of saying we don't want it to change at all. But I think the horses are out of the barn. And I think if they don't change it, I think the big boys leave. I think the big boys create their own, because they have a set of needs.
You mean the major schools?
Major schools have a set of needs that aren't equitably being addressed versus what the smaller schools are.
Bob, do you agree with that? Do you think there's a chance that the powerhouse schools, the powerhouse conferences, walk away from the NCAA?
It's their dream. Absolutely. They've been aiming, they've been heading to this. Remember, the BCS. What was the BCS? Why did we need a BCS? Because there was a subculture of powerful schools that had their own, as Butch properly says, calls them needs, their own agenda, their own wants, their own situation, their own reality. You know, of course, we're heading for this. I don't see the NCAA surviving as we know it. They're fighting over the money. They're fighting over distribution of the money. They're fighting over access to the money. And they're also preserving a culture in many areas of the country that is vital to the day-to-day happiness, frankly, of an amazingly large number of people who reside in those areas. The areas that are not dominated by professional sports the way my home city is, areas that you're going to tell me that someday that people in Kansas want to wake up and there are no Jayhawk basketball? People want to wake up in Kentucky and there's no Wildcat basketball? Want to wake up in Alabama and there's no Wild Crimson Tide football? No, this is a need. This is a social need. But those people they're dealing with has nothing to do with Idaho. Has nothing to do with San Jose State. Has nothing to do with Harvard. And they're all under that same umbrella in basketball. It's not a practical organization.
I think it's worth noting, and the three of us would acknowledge that would know this firsthand. If you've never been to a college town in America where there is no professional sports, where the game is your hometown team, you can't even convey to somebody who's never seen that, experienced it, how all-encompassing that is, how 24 hours that is. Go ahead, Bob.
Today I'm at Fenway Park, and I'm sitting in my seat, and I hear these conversations going on behind me for the entire game. And at one point, the discussion comes up, one of my favorite little topics, how impossible it is to schedule a wedding, because there's almost 2 months you can schedule a wedding and not run up against a sports event that's going to piss off people if they have to miss it. February is pretty safe, fairly. February is pretty safe. I forget what the other month is. I mean, there may only be one. Anyway, I've laughed at this because this guy is talking about an upcoming wedding in the fall that he said that they want him to go to. Somebody needs him to go to. He said, and he's a Michigan booster, a backer. And he said, it's the night of a Michigan-Penn State game. I'd rather cut my big toe off than go to that wedding. Quote, unquote. That kind of sums up what you're talking about.
And people don't understand that this is 24 hours a day, all they think about. And it's a big deal.
It is a really big deal, man. I mean, it's so much bigger than when I graduated in 1980. I mean, it's scary. I mean, they got teams in used to be the Big Ten that I said, what is Rutgers doing in the Big Ten? You know, but geographically, they're finding ways to expand. They're eating more real estate, and which, you know, allows economically for the conference to make more money. And it is a big deal. I think of when you've got Nick in Alabama, former pro coach, and Calipari in Kentucky, former pro coach. At the end of the day, if they've got a voice, it's going to change because they know what's fair and what's not fair.
Yeah, because they've been there, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, they've seen it. They know how it changes their players' lives.
Right.
And the NCAA in Indianapolis doesn't, you know, they're like far to the right. And, you know, we don't want to hear we're changing their life.
Yeah, I think all three of us know what's coming here, Bob. But, you know, and I have probably run this past you before, and I apologize if I'm being redundant. Mm-hmm. But you know what I struggle with? I don't doubt that college athletes getting some sort of compensation is coming. What I can't possibly figure out is how they do this.
I don't think it's coming.
You don't, huh?
I mean, I don't think they'll ever figure out how to do it right. They have to do better than what they're doing. They have to figure out, but I don't think a pure payment, I don't think it's coming. I do not.
Well, so what's the answer? Is that eliminate the...
How about money in escrow? I think money in escrow.
Money in escrow?
I think that's the start. That's I don't know if that's a panacea, but that's one thought that I think maybe could be developed into something logical. But I don't think... Remember, we're talking about Title IX. You're talking about all the non-revenue sports.
Yeah.
And by the way, are you going to be talking about more money for the starter than the 12th man?
Well, that's the point, right?
I mean, you are talking about merit and why these guys deserve to be paid. They're bringing in the money, but it's not everybody that's bringing in the money. You know, and you can talk all you want about, well, a team's team and you need practice players, all which is true. And any coach will tell you that.
Yep.
And any athlete knows that. And Butch knows that. That you have very valuable members of your team who do not get much playing time, but they are important to the success of that team over a 6-month basis. But are you going to pay them the same? I think these are insurmountable issues.
What about Northwestern? When's the vote?
I don't know when the vote is, but
I think it's the
25th. That is not the solution. Unionization brings with it so many details, so many unintended consequences here. That is simply not the solution, I don't think. I just do not think. I think this is a good thing that they've raised shown the light on the problem, that they're going to force the NCAA more than anything that's ever happened into re-examining itself. But I do not think that unionization is the answer.
I don't think it's the answer either, but I think that they are going. I think the players have a chance to win.
These are all steps, I think, heading in a direction. And I don't think any of us know exactly where they're going to go. Although I agree with Mr. Ryan. I've long been a proponent of putting the money in escrow. The second thing I'm a proponent of is raising the maximum amount that a college student athlete can earn while he's at school. Now, in the case of college basketball players, now they're one and done. You know, how much are they? Yeah. How many guys have part-time jobs and stuff? But to have such a low ceiling on what a young man or woman can earn as a part-time job while they're going to school, to me, is ridiculous.
Well, I think the thing that bothers me about it is they don't have insurance. So if you're an economically deprived kid and your parents can't provide insurance for you when you go to school and you get injured, you don't have insurance. So I think there's a whole bunch of things in that little box that, from a baseline standpoint, need to go, the thought process on the escrow. But I think that, insurance should be available. And if they're deducting from their escrow or whatever, but I think that there's a whole bunch of things. But when you take a one-and-done kid like Wiggins and they're selling, 200,000 of his jerseys, or the little quarterback at Texas A&M, at some point, mathematically, it's inequitable because the scholarship does not cost anywhere near.
Well, but does that athlete deserve to get all that money, or should that be shared?
Well, someone has to get to the table and decide. The issue right now is they won't even sit at the table.
Well, no, I get that. But I think the point we're trying to make is when you get to that table, you can get to that table. I think they're going to get to that table. It's once they get there and say, okay, here's the pie. How are we dividing it up, first of all, between you and us, meaning the NCAA and the athlete?
Yep.
And then which of you athletes gets what? Does the star volleyball player get more or less than the fourth string running back?
It can't work that way, and Mr. Ryan brought that point up. You need the whole team. You can't practice without 8, 9, 10, 11.
So you think they all get the same?
You have to. To start somewhere, they all have to get the same. I mean, the reality is that
I'm okay with that. I think that's going
to
be a...
But why we have Mr. Ryan, I'd like to ask him his thoughts on the... if they move to 2 and 3 years in basketball instead of the one and done...
Yes.
Okay.
What do you think happens?
We're talking about ideal world. In a utopian world, which I go back to 1968, and we never heard of Spencer Haywood.
Right.
And I don't mean personally. I mean, but you know what I'm saying. It's a 4-year graduates, fully formed human beings.
Yep.
Even if it was a whole different world, and a much better world. And I mean, the baseball thing is great. 3 years, but I don't see that ever happening. I think it's much more likely to go the reverse. I just think you got to go back to I think what we need is the development of the NBDL, which is getting better and better and more important, and teams are taking it much more seriously, and it becomes a full minor league, and we have no 20-year-old limit. Anybody can go into the draft out of high school, and they could, but with the understanding of suddenly that you may not be playing for the big boys. You might be a minor league player to start. But if that's what you want, you want to be a professional, we'll make you a professional. You won't be in the NBA. Now, that may scare a lot of them into coming into college. Okay. But I just think that there shouldn't be any limit. And I really believe that. I think that the way it is, this one and done is and unfeasible. I don't think you'll ever get the baseball thing in the 3 years. So I'm just soon go the other way. It just frustrates me so, but. There's so many things to talk about in this.
Would you guys be in favor of a system that said, and I'm just going to throw a hypothetical out there. Only lottery teams can draft freshmen. In other words, you can declare, anybody can declare, but only X number of teams can draft freshmen. After that, the rest, the undrafted freshmen, have to go back to school. Is there an inequity there?
I don't know. I could see lawyers jumping in line on that one somehow, I guess. I hadn't thought about that. I don't know. I've never had that one. That's one I'd have to ponder about.
Okay.
My thoughts on it are, I graduate in 1980. There's only a certain amount of Division I schools playing basketball. Now we sit here in 2014. That number is probably doubled, close to double.
Maybe more.
So the inventory of available players has grown exponentially.
Yeah.
All right? So that's the real problem. What they're trying to do is shut the spigot down, all right, and say, hey, we don't need all these guys. So why are we even letting them think about being a—
Well, that's why you have two rounds of a draft. That's it.
But you have 300 players available for two rounds instead of—
Yeah.
All right?
So, 60 spots. And
So the reality is that someone has to say college is truly not for everyone. I mean, most of the baseball players, how many of them went to college?
Do you know what the split is, Bob?
No, I'm going to guess 25, somewhere between 25 and 35, maybe.
I'd guess in that neighborhood.
Went to college, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The rest get drafted out of high school.
I agree. Get drafted out of high school, all right? So I coached Tracy McGrady. I believe he was a far better pro without the problem of being in school for 1 or 2 years because he was there to learn his craft, and that was the focus. And I didn't have to hear about North Carolina or Duke or college is not for everyone. And that's the reality. I think the problem the NBA with their plan is that once they say you go to the D League, you're going to have street guys chasing these kids in high school to get them to turn pro because there is an advantage to the agent. Now he doesn't have to send him to college and worry about getting put in jail for the kid having an agent or soliciting while he's in school. Mm-hmm. It's a joke. That part of it is a hypocrisy, that you don't think that the kid is thinking or the agents aren't chasing the parents while that guy is there for a year. So
that's interesting.
It's going to create— – so now the agent says, okay, good. I don't have to go through that exposure of, you know— – and, Bob, you know this. When all these guys started getting caught, including my brother Chris at Ohio State, all the state legislatures start passing laws— – That if you solicited a state athlete, mm-hmm. all right, yep. it was a minimum of 5 years, all right? So now they get around it by hiring one of the students at the university to chase them around.
Well, it's a mess now, but I mean, I don't know how you clean all that stuff up. Let's move on quickly in the last couple of minutes. Mike Woodson, if you look at Mike Woodson's record, Mike Woodson, by the way, fired by the New York Knicks. Mike Woodson had a winning record with the New York Knicks, and a pretty decent record with the New York Knicks. Now, nobody's going to be is surprised that Woodson is gone, and when you bring in a new guy, he wants to bring in his new guys, and we all get that. I'm surprised, though, that I haven't seen more defense of Mike Woodson going forward as getting screwed out of his job. Mr. Ryan?
Well, I know Mike Lupica has been on that bandwagon and has taken up his case as recently as today, and I know that. But not as many. No, he's kind of like collateral damage in this whole Jackson thing, and that's not fair to him. And I'm certain that he's not coached his last NBA team. I wouldn't worry much about that. I'm certain that there's a job out there coming for Mike Woodson again. It has not been fair to him. He did a fine job last year. They won 54. They won a series. And now this year they had all kinds of things go wrong physically from the start, and which he had— obviously no coach has that control. And the whole tenor of the whole organization was bad. It always is with Dolan. I agree. Mike is on an unfair victim of circumstance here, and I'm confident that I know he has a lot of friends in the business, and I know that some people will take a good look at this and know that he's a good man to have in charge of your team.
I'd almost be surprised if he doesn't have a job by next fall.
Yeah, I think he will. I don't know when.
Now, do you guys want the truth about this?
Okay, here's Butch Carter with the truth.
All right. So Woodson was part of an agency that had the player personnel director, the general manager.
Right.
All right. So
I know.
All right. So when Dolan kicked out the agency, all right, everybody knows that you got to go because he's made a decision on a new path for his team. You know, he let that agency in. They delivered Carmelo. They delivered JR. They delivered a player personnel director. They delivered a GM, and they delivered a coach. All right? So I would think that D'Antoni doesn't think that Woody's movement from the second seat to his seat was fair. All right? Now, Woodson was my roommate in college. Okay? So, you know, I think he did a really good job the first year. I think they fell asleep on the conditioning side. And you fall asleep on the conditioning side, it normally shows up in your injury ratio. All right?
Which happened.
Right, which happened. Okay? I hope that Woody ends up coaching in college somewhere close to where we went to college. All right? I hope we never see him in the pros. All right?
Really, huh?
I'm sick of watching my Scarlet Cream and Crimson team lose. And Woody's from Indianapolis. We're going to need a coach, if not this year, but next year. And
you want him to go to Indiana?
I didn't say that, but I hope he ends up somewhere.
That's what you said, Carter.
But I think that Dolan made a decision to go a path with an agency.
Yeah, that's it. And there's a lot of that.
I agree.
There right now in the NBA.
And then he wakes up and says, this ain't working for me.
Yeah, and then you got to fire everybody, right? You got to get rid of a whole bunch.
Correct. So, you know, that's why, you know, Phil did what everyone else. What's any difference in what Phil did and everybody else does when they go in? So,
before we let you go, real quickly, Bob, we talked earlier with Jerry Eisenberg of the Newark Star-Ledger about the passing of Hurricane Carter, and they put a note on my lineup, I guess, to mention it to you. And I'm not familiar with what your relationship, if any, was with Carter.
There's no reason for that. I'm afraid I'm strictly a boxing, you know, casual boxing fan, well aware of the generality of the story,
right?
It's sad, you know, awful thing that happened to him that one can imagine. 19 years incarcerated for a crime you did not commit, and I think that what he did with the rest of his life was seemed to me to be pretty worthwhile. That's all I can say.
Yeah, we debated. You know, I think all of us believe he didn't commit the crime. Yeah. The evidence certainly. There was not overwhelming evidence to convict him, and yet he was convicted. And yet, the movie itself did not totally portray Reuben Carter, the angry man who had been in and out of jail and had a troubled youth that may have led to something like this. And I guess we'll never know. What the answer was. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe with us. We'll take the break, and primetime will continue on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
One minute here. That's hardly enough time to even burp or say screw Brooklyn. I didn't say that. I just said we don't have time to say that. Those are two entirely different things, as my friend Coach Carter understands. So how many jobs available in the NBA right now? Four already?
Four, I think.
There are going to be more, too.
Yeah, that'd be some folks get ticked off, I think. Vogel's in trouble in Atlanta. With Atlanta series with Indiana. So I think, you know, Larry's going to have to make a choice.
Well, you never know, Carter.
No,
you never know. You never know. I know you don't, but you never know. I'm trying to help you out. Tired of carrying you all these years.
That's one way to get rid of him.
Good night from Toronto.